Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Behaving poorly. That's okay. That's the least of the problems, really. Oh, out here dangling along on the last frayed thread of a dry rotted shoestring. It was about 5:30 p.m. Eastern time when I, you know, monitors go off to save electricity. We're kind of into that. Kind of jiggled the mouse. Nothing. Jiggled again. Nothing. Nothing, nothing. So I spent the last, 25 minutes subbing in one old monitor for another old monitor that has now gone to its long home and its just reward. And now the production machine doesn't like for me to move tabs or anything. Yeah. That's okay. We'll get it beat. We really will. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It is Monday, the 30th day of December. Bit of an anniversary around here. It was 2 years ago today that a local pillhead rear-ended Agnes and Ferg in the rusty red pickup truck and sent the rusty red pickup truck to its long home. Oh. Thank you, Lottie. The monitor isn't gone. It just needs the light tubes replaced. Well, yeah, I mean, I can't complain. The monitor was 10 years old, had been in constant use for 10 years. So, no, really, no complaints here. But, you know, just another day. But it is. It's the 30th day of December, 2013. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find entrance and access to the chat room. Chat room moderator of long standing Lottie is in there with me right now, and the room will begin to fill up in short order. You are welcome, of course, to join in. If you never have, you should. It's rather a good time, really. Thank you very much, Randy. It's good to know in a circumstance like this, coming through loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac. Good. Good, 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 good. There's Mr. Gibson wandering into the chat room. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. It is, we're just about done with 2013, and sorry, I mean, I know it's a big thing to make lists of the best of this and the worst of that and the weirdest and the tallest and the shortest and the ugliest and the prettiest and the fanciest and the nifty. I've got no patience for that. In large part because while I respect the human need for revels and celebrations and ritualistic markings of occasions, there's no such thing as a new year. I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'm sure. There is no such thing as a new year. Because the idea of a new year is kind of anti-democratic and anti-science, isn't it? As if the Earth was just sitting there in space, spinning around, and yeah. But see, the sun is never in the same place, and the Earth is never in the same. It's all one long trip through the universe, isn't it? And me, again, this time of year being this time of year, I will note that I far prefer the Roman approach to New Year's, or maybe the Chinese or the Jewish approach or Muslim, anything but the end of freaking December. But here in the Western world and in places touched by the Western world, we mark the end of the year at the end of December, and the new year begins with a commemoration of the day that some near barbarians went a-chopping on little baby Jesus's pee-pee. Really. New Year's Day is the day that the Christ child was circumcised, assuming that he was born on December 25th. Kind of puts it all in perspective, doesn't it? Not really. No, Mr. Gibson, it's not just a really good excuse to have a beer. Sun's up, mail's in, somebody's birthday somewhere. That'll do for that. No, New Year's Day is the day that we celebrate taking the long knives to the schmeckle of Jesus. Really? Ew. Just ew? I remember once upon a time, I remember my dad telling me that back in his days in the Navy, that from time to time they would serve creamed chipped beef on toast. And that was foreskins on toast. Navy humor, I guess. As opposed to the other thing on toast that was shit on a shingle. Oh well. I think we'll stick with the black-eyed peas and the corned beef and cabbage. Although I am adding something to the New Year's feast this year. I've managed to jealously guard a remainder of the wild rice I was given while I was in Wisconsin last November. And we'll make the black-eyed pea hoppin', John, with wild rice from the Cacogan Sloughs of northern Wisconsin, and it will be good. So that's one of the New Year's plans. And by the way, in terms of scheduling and program notes, no program Monday. This is Monday. Good God, if the week's going to start like this, I'm just going to dig a hole and crawl in it. No program Wednesday, New Year's Day. No program Wednesday evening. Everything else should be fairly normal, except for tomorrow night, because tomorrow night is the Great Big Horn Skype-a-palooza New Year's Eve show. God, I think we had 19, 20 people participating last year. Sparky, our chat room moderator and intrepid host of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, will be running that scene. And it should be a lot of fun. Last year's was. We'll go for 3 hours, and then depending on what Rick Smith does, he'll go, and then we'll come back around at midnight and go for, well, as long as I got any oomph left in me. So that's the plan. Let's see. Wrapping up the year. Checked it out. Fundraising. We are about, and this is kind of par for the course, we're about $700 away from finishing off the fundraising for the month of December. So that's where that is. And I want to thank Sal, who jumped out there first to get things started this evening. Thank you, Sal. It is much appreciated. And anybody who wants to jump in, well, we got today and tomorrow to raise about, well, close to, not quite. I think it's like $685. It's actually $680 now. To raise that over the course of two programs or so. PayPal's fine. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The traditional mail address is also there as well. It is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, WV 25801. Remember, checks and money orders should be made payable to Head-On Communications or the Horn, and not to Bob Kincaid, please. Now, don't think for a minute that I don't know what day this is. Oh, no. By the way, the food porn for this evening has started in the Horn chat room. I mentioned cream chip beef on toast, and away they went. We are down to, and Lottie is right, I'd love to try this, salt cod, creamed salt cod on English muffins. Whoa, that just sounds delightful. But no, I know what day it is, beyond being merely the 30th day of December and the second anniversary of the rusty red pickup truck going to its long home. Oh no, it is something more entirely. That's right, step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. The Midway has seen you, as you've seen the Midway, you've seen the rides. Now step up to the most shocking exhibition of all. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Big Morans, little Morans, skinny Morans, fat Morans, male Morans, female Morans, right-wing Morans of every stripe, libertarians, Ayn Randians, Christian Morans, Republican Morans, teabagging Morans. We have Morans aplenty. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can peer behind this thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas and witness the absurdity, the outrageousness, the meanness, the stupidity, the abject foolhardiness of Morans. A little bit of a warning, folks. Hang on to your purses, hang on to your wallets, hang on to your loved ones, because once you get behind the thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas, the Morans can get a little bit grabby. Head for the hills, and you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Yes, indeed. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Where to begin? Well, I thought I would share with you my experience. I've mentioned the great good fun that I've had with the Affordable Care Act website. Well, I finally got through today to see the marketplace plans. Now, this is West Virginia. Your experiences may differ, depending on where you are. But here's what the for-profit insurance industry has in store for folks in almost level West by God, Virginia. Remember, they determined that we do not qualify because for the Medicaid expansion, because in the words of the letter, West Virginia does not offer Medicaid to people like you. So let's start with the bronze plan. All of these, by the way, are offered by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield, offering minimal health care for maximum profit in the mountain state of West Virginia. This is their Health Savings Blue PPO 3000. Sounds like something that cleans a toilet in a science fiction movie. Monthly premium, $655.09 per month. That's for Agnes and me. That's no subsidies. Nothing. $655.09, that's $6,000 in group total deductibles, out-of-pocket maximum $12,700, 40% co-insurance after deductible for a primary doctor, 40% co-insurance after deductible for a specialist doctor, and 40% co-insurance after deductible for a generic prescription. $663.28 per month will get you Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of West Virginia's Comprehensive Care Blue PPO 4000. Dear God. And it goes on like that. Remember, these are the bronze plans. More bronze plans. Stop the damn slideshow. All right, hold on. Let me get out of this. I hate Windows 8.1. No, so then we move over to more bronze plans. And 663.28 with an $8,000 deductible for the group. That's $4,000 apiece for Agnes and me, and $12,700 out-of-pocket maximum. $70 co-payment co-insurance for a primary doctor, $100 for a specialist doctor, and 50% co-insurance after deductible for generic prescriptions. Good luck if you need something name brand. $680.90 a month will get you Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield's Shared Cost Blue PPO 5000. $10,000 group deductible total. That's $5,000 apiece. Out-of-pocket maximum, $12,700. But do, let's continue. Let's see what some of the better plans look like. Hey, look there. This is a silver plan from Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield West Virginia Health Savings Blue PPO 2500. It's $818.36 per month for Agnes and me with a $5,000 group total deductible. That's only $2,500 apiece and an out-of-pocket maximum of $7,000 with a 10% co-insurance after deductible primary doctor, 10% co-insurance after deductible specialist doctor. On and on and on for $820.02 a month and a $3,000 group total deductible, $12,700 out-of-pocket minimum, maximum. You can get the Comprehensive Care Blue PPO 1500. Oh, but, you know, let's live large. Let's go and look at gold. Mm-hmm. Because we hillbillies are not allowed a platinum plan. Still, for the low, for-profit health insurance price of just $942.19 per month, with a $3,000 group total deductible, that's $1,500 apiece, and a $7,000 out-of-pocket maximum, you get a $35 primary doctor, a $45 specialist doctor, and an $8 generic prescription. Man. And then, finally, these aren't all of them, just some of them. For $989.73 per month for two human beings and a $2,600 group total deductible, that would be roughly $1,300 apiece. I think it would be exactly $1,300 apiece, wouldn't it? And an out-of-pocket maximum of $4,600. Well, 10% co-insurance after deductible for a primary doctor, 10% co-insurance after deductible for a specialist doctor, 10% co-insurance after deductible for generic prescriptions. Beautiful, ain't it? No, I didn't think so either. Randy, with a question. And a good one. What is the federal government supposed to kick in? Well, for Agnes and me, Randy, nothing. Not a penny. I mean, not a sausage. Not a joke. Now, there is an appeals process, which I'm presently engaged in, and Jesus, from the looks of it, that'll be like something out of Dickens' Bleak House. I can't wait. Ain't nobody going to have no insurance on January 1, that's for starters. But because this is obviously screwed up. But the thing is, even with, and this is the important part, even with subsidies, even getting the best plan out there with the $1,500 deductible per person, that ain't insurance. That's just a wealth transfer scheme. There are 12 available plans inside the West Virginia marketplace, all of which are offered by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. What do you do? I mean, if the federal government subsidy kicks in, so what? Okay, $150 a piece for Agnes and me per month. What's it get you? Yeah, see, Jay Cruzen just pointed something out. If the federal government don't kick in anything, you must make more than $80,000 a year. Not by a long shot. Do you happen to recall the desperation with which I was trying to finish my application, and I went 0 for 14 trying to do it? And then I waited for 45 minutes for somebody to pick up the phone, and I got some guy who said, I can finish it for you. Well, he finished it. I don't know what he did, but he finished it. No, we're not in a place, Jay Cruzen, where we can even spell $80,000 a year. Uh-uh. No, this is screwed up beyond all recognition, and I checked with some experts on the topic, at least here in almost level West by God, Virginia, and found out that, yes, this system is so screwed up to be as to be laughable were it not a matter of life and death. Note coming in from Darlene up in Connecticut. Subject line, Blue Cross Blue Shield. Barf. Oh, my God, Bob. I feel so bad for both you and Agnes. The plans you're reading off are absolutely awful. It's outrageous that you and Agnes have been thrown into the for-profit health insurance pit to be consumed by the alligators. And I hate to insult alligators. Something sounds terribly wrong with all of this, and something is. But the problem is that in order to sort out what the problem is, I have to go through this Dickensian, Byzantine, Bleak House appeal process. What's that line from Shakespeare after? Who gets run through? Is it Tybalt or Mercutio? And he looks at Romeo and says, ask after me in the morning and you shall find me a very grave fellow. Laughing in the face of death as he was. It's kind of what it feels like. There's a Robert Frost poem out there. It's the shortest poem he ever wrote, of which I am aware. And it's called Forgive, O Lord. And all it says is this. Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee, and I'll forgive thy great big one on me. See, one of the crazy things is that our kids qualified for expanded Medicaid. Agnes and I did not. Even though our income numbers are way the F below that 138% of the federal poverty line mark. Because, you know, this is not a program that is generated by someone who's out there with a Gulfstream jet making millions. Or even tenths of millions. Well, I think you've got to move several decimal places over to get to me and Agnes. So off into the world of the appeal process I go. And the flying spaghetti monster in his beer volcano and stripper factory heaven only knows what will come out the other end of that sausage grinder. So from where I stand, yes, yes, I know all kinds of people are getting signed up, and maybe there are people out there in the country somewhere who have affordable health care. It ain't me. It ain't me, babe. No, no, no. It ain't me. Some of you probably know where that line comes from. It originally comes from Bob Dylan. But the delivery of it is something else entirely. And I was thinking that, and I was thinking of that along with Robert Frost and Shakespeare and things like that earlier today. Remember Mr. French?
Go away from my window. Leave at your own chosen speed. I'm not the one you want, babe. I ain't the one you need. You say you're looking for someone never weak but always strong to protect you and defend you, whether you're right or wrong. Someone to open each and every door. But it ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me, babe.
No, no,
it ain't me you're looking for, babe. Go lightly from the ledge, babe. Go lightly on the ground. I'm not the one you want, babe. I don't let you down. You say you're looking for someone who promised never to part. Someone to close his eyes for you. Someone to close his heart. Someone who will die for you and more. Ooh, it ain't me, babe.
Ooh.
No, no, no. It ain't me, babe.
God, it reminds me of Beaky Buzzard. Oh, no, no, can't do that. Oh, no, mama wouldn't. No, no. Can you imagine what that must have been like back in 1967, 1966, when they were setting it up? You spent your whole life mastering the classics on your violin, your cello, your bass, whatever. And you get a session gig. And you come home one afternoon and you say, well, got paid. Really? Philharmonic? No. Gig in a bar? No. Standing at the bus stop? Mm-mm. No, no, no. No, I got engaged to play on the Sebastian Cabot Actor Reads Bob Dylan Poet album. No, no, no. No, 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 it ain't me. Oh. Jesus. I mean, that's and I'm in a strange place over this. Because I want more people to have health care. From the self-interest portion of the program, I would like for me to have health care. But this is not the way to do it. And by this, I don't mean, you know, that Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people who's going to send us all to the FEMA death camp ovens if we don't pay for our health care. No, not like, no, not that at all. the system as we understood it, the healthcare system as we understood it, was badly broken. And it was badly broken by people who were putting profits way the hell out in front of the well-being of human beings. And with that in mind, some geniuses, Max Baucus among them, started looking through some dusty old spider egg casing encrusted bins from over to the Heritage Foundation, and they found a hornswoggle over there of epic proportions. Hell, P.T. Barnum and W.C. Fields together would blush just looking at the damn thing. Here's what we're going to do, boys. We're going to take a whole bunch of federal money, and we're going to give it to the insurance industry, and the insurance industry is going to give bullshit insurance to the American people. And they won't realize how poorly they're insured until they actually need it. Oh, that's brilliant! At least that's the way it's working out here. What's interesting, though, is in the determination letter, they did inform me that if I chose not to buy insurance, I would not have the penalty imposed upon me because of the 8% threshold. So on the one hand, I'm not well off enough to, I'm not well off enough to qualify for subsidies, or, oh my God, can you imagine if that $900, $450 per person per month, what if that is with the subsidies? Zounds! I don't know. Randy and PA noting, there were supposed to be competitors to drive the cost down. Oh, please. Ron and Raleigh says, BCBS, Blue Cross Blue Shield, I can't stop laughing or I'll cry. Ron says, here in the old North State, there are only two companies that offer health coverage, BCBS and Coventry. Coventry only covers 69 of 100 counties. Remember, BCBS is a nonprofit. No. Essentially, you and I are paying for the privilege of owning a policy that pays for nothing while you pay and pay to say that you're covered. And that's about the size of it. Now, remember, within this odd little medieval morality play, the application that dude finally finished, and man, did he finish it, I'd gotten all the way to the very end with it. And this is what got vomited forth by the system. Oh, by the way, I found out today that here in almost level West by God, Virginia, which is a relatively small population, you know, there's about 1.5 million of us in this state. Shoot, we're not even a damned zip code in some places. But I found out that there are at least 7,500 people in this state whose healthcare.gov marketplace decision was so utterly screwed up by the marketplace that the applications themselves were reduced to being something on a par with Linear A. So, what's that like in a place like, Florida? Oh, wait, well, or Texas, you can only, well, but there's no Medicaid expansion there, so, yeah, but you get the idea. You know, the marketplace, healthcare.gov marketplace, is designed to drive people into the tender and loving arms of the for-profit health insurance industry. So, consequently, there's a vested interest in making sure that people don't get, in states that have opted into it, availability for the Medicaid expansion. Yeah, I know, Randy. Your kids are supposed to get on your insurance until they're 26. Then riddle me this, Batman. Why are the kids Medicaid eligible and Agnes and I not? I guess they got to recoup that somewhere, don't they? Because after all, remember, the Affordable Care Act is about providing monetary support to the for-profit insurance industry. It is not about providing access to affordable and meaningful health care. If it was about access to affordable, meaningful health care, we would have had a bill that said, got a Social Security number? Good, you're covered. It ain't rocket science. No, this is 16 different ways. This is screwed up through 19 different dimensions. Randy, you like the Batman reference? Oh, God. But I thought, since I had been telling you about our ongoing odyssey, Jesus, I'd rather be strapped to the mast between Scylla and Charybdis and listening to the sirens singing in atonal, off-key, laryngitic, Jesus. But that's where it is. That's where we are. All those dreams of health insurance on January 1st, forget about it. But why are we surprised? And I'm not saying this because this is not the, oh my God, because see, both the right wing and the purportedly extreme left are equally capable of saying, Barack Obama is the devil. I'm not there. I'm not going to play that game because the stakes are too goddamn high. This is life and death stuff, not just for me, but for a hell of a lot of other Americans. But this is a screwed up mess. But as is often the case, and I think our old buddy Bart Kopp first enunciated this, what is Bart Kopp's first law? If somebody makes a mistake and makes a shit ton of money out of it, expect them to continue to make that mistake time after time after time after time. So yeah, this is a screwed up mess. But it's a screw up by design. And you know, you don't have to. You don't even have to be Alex Jones to go there. This isn't the sort of conspiracy that requires you to believe 17 impossible things before breakfast. This is a straight up out in the open conspiracy that they told us they were doing. They said they were going to take federal monies and give it to the insurance industry because the insurance industry could be trusted to use the money to provide health insurance to a vast majority of Americans. Some 30 million more people were going to be having health, for-profit health care as a result of the Affordable Care Act. Maybe they will. Or maybe they'll have a $5,000 deductible or $2,500 per person or something. Who knows? You know, if I had $1,000 laying around, I'd buy that. And you know, the gold plan is pure crap. But if I had $1,000 laying around that wasn't doing anything every month, hell, maybe I'd buy it. And then I'd be terrified to ever go to the doctor. Because once you paid the $1,000 to the insurance industry, you sure don't have a few thousand dollars laying around to pay up front before the insurance ever kicks in. So I've just spent 40 minutes talking about our wanderings through that fetid swamp. And that's even unfair to swamps, just like what Darlene said was unfair to alligators. But that's not all that's on the docket for this evening, as it were. By the way, Darlene, thank you very much. $680 to go to finish the month. And, you know, really, that when you think about it, that's only, that's $380 apart from the $150 we try to raise any given evening. So that's not at all that surprising. But Darlene says, hope this helps some. Darlene has put a $100 challenge on the table for this evening. She would like to see others answer it and get us all the way out of December and a clean start in January. It does help immensely, Darlene. Thank you very much. So, you know where the PayPal button is, or shoot me a note saying, you know, it's in the mail or whatever, and hopefully we will get out of December without being in a giant hole. So there it is. If you want to answer Darlene, it's much appreciated. Jeremy in Vermont with an email. Healthcare. The only reason I'm covered by the AHCA, Bob, is due to my employer. It costs him $600 a month. Wouldn't be much less for me to pay a loan, and I don't make close to $80K. Hell, I'm lucky if I make $30K in a year. Yeah. That's why I keep coming back to the notion that this is God, I don't like to agree with teabaggers. This is socialism. This is socialism to the extent that the wealth of the nation is being used to some degree. It is being spread around. But it's not being spread around to you and me. It's being spread around to the for-profit healthcare industry, which is mercilessly capitalist. See, that's how socialism works in America. When money goes to, it's socialism when money goes from all of us to the few of them. But then when they in return give us nothing in exchange for our money, well, that's just the free market. Socialism for them, free market for us. See how it works? Yeah, Randy, I remember that part too. And he says, and the insurance companies are supposed to issue rebate checks if they don't spend 80% on your health care, assuming that you trust their accounting firms. No, and no, and they never will. There's only one answer to this. Let all of these asshole companies have a piece of the administrative pie and Medicare for all. Sandra asking, Bob, can you not just reapply if your income meets the eligibility requirement for Medicaid? Well, if I do, I think I'm better off in an appeal situation, and the person I talked to earlier today, who had nothing to do with healthcare.gov, agreed, appeal this, and then out of that, get something going. Because if I just start a whole new application, then maybe there will be something in April? And there's no guarantee that it won't be the same screwed up, muddled up, profitized, miserable adventure in healthcare capitalism that this one is. That's the answer I got. So that's how that plays out. But we're not going to spend the program talking about this little adventure. I mean, if you want to, we can certainly talk more about it, but I think that's pretty much the long and the short of it. No, it's Moran Monday, and we have Morans. Oh, God, have we got Morans. I don't honestly recall ever having, and with all apologies to our friends in that location, I don't recall us ever having a Hawaiian Moran before. Yeah, I know. Get out the grass skirts and the ukuleles and the lays and the spam and the aloha shirts. Maybe crank up the theme from Magnum PI in the background. But yeah, we've got a Hawaiian Moran this evening. And when those come along, you've got to pay attention to them. Now, this is kind of a twofer. You remember, what was it, a couple of weeks or so ago when I had that story from Grist all about how after their Clavern meeting, the Alec Monsters decided that their focus in 2014 was going to be to do everything in their power to kill any kind of renewable energy? Yeah, the Grist story was from the 6th of December. And writing at Grist, Suzanne Goldenberg and Ed Pilkington say, over the coming year, the American Legislative Exchange Council will promote legislation with goals ranging from penalizing individual homeowners and weakening state clean energy regulations to blocking the EPA from doing its job. Ms. Goldenberg and Mr. Pilkington reporting that about 800 state legislatures from around the country, as well as business leaders, descended upon the three-day event in Washington, D.C., that was headlined by Wisconsin Senator, not very bright person, Ron Johnson, and a person described even in this article as budget guru, Paul Ryan. Ted Cruz also showed up. And so the centerpiece of all of this is to take aim, and they've already got a pejorative for it, to take aim at people that the oligarchs, plutocrats, and other general scum and slime of ALEC. Hey, my junior senator from West Virginia is a member of ALEC. He's the only Democrat in the Democratic caucus who is a member of ALEC. Hi, Joe! Dick. But yes, really. They've got a pejorative for people who generate energy from the sun, because these avaricious misanthropes, searching there, these avaricious misanthropes have decided that if they can't figure out a way to make us pay them for making our own energy from sunshine, that they'll just try to stop us from doing it altogether, because America is a better place when it is fired by frack gas or coal. Yes, they have a pejorative term. We who would like to generate energy from the sun are now called free riders. Not freedom riders. Oh, no, 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 no. No, those they buried in an earthen dam in Neshoba County, Mississippi. Free riders. Or just out there riding, surfing the grid, making their own electricity, and poor little bedraggled utilities are having to not get paid by them. Damn. Right? Free riders. Are you pissed off yet? I was pissed off when we had this story the first time. I'm even more pissed off now because it turns out that they are hard at work. This was their 2014 plan, and it's already coming into play in Hawaii in 2013. No, I am not kidding. The article comes from Scientific American. The title, "A Solar Boom So Successful It's Been Halted. Photovoltaics Proved So Successful in Hawaii That the Local Utility, the Hawaiian Electric Company, HECO, Has Instituted Policies to Block Further Expansion." Back in September, the Hawaiian Electric Company declared that all those people putting up all those photovoltaic panels, solar panels, making all that electricity was creating a problem for them. Because on many circuits, HECO claims, there is so much solar energy, according to the Scientific American article, that it poses a threat to the system and a safety issue. Starting immediately, contractors and residents would need permission to connect most small rooftop systems to the grid. Did I mention that this is Hawaii and not Iceland? I know we've got a handful of dedicated members of the Horn Family Commune in Hawaii, and you got lots of sunshine, right? Yeah. Well, HECO is trying to kill solar energy dead in its tracks. Because all that business about, you know, oh, it could pose a safety hazard. Maybe HECO, instead of lining the pockets of its shareholders and its directors and officers, maybe it might want to plow a little bit of money back into the grid so that all that electricity could actually be. But then wait, they wouldn't make as much money. How about that? Son of a gun. Charles Wang is the from the Hawaii Eco Project. He attended a solar conference in San Diego earlier in December, and he said that Hawaii is a cautionary tale and something that you will face down the road in your marketplaces. He continued, "I am from the future. The utility is that 800-pound gorilla. If you push it to the corner of the room, it's going to fight back. That's what's happening right now." Mark Carlin, writing, a friend of the program, writing over at Truthout, says, when you watch those programs that try to piece together how ancient civilizations disappeared through archaeological digs, the fossil fuel, utility greed, and assault on the environment in Hawaii, symbolized by aging grids, will be a telling sign of what became of an empire that choked on its wallet and blocked out the sun. Isaac says, the Hawaii House of Representatives are Dems. And ostensibly, probably the Hawaii Public Service Commission are too. But this was not a decision that was made legislatively. It was made in a corporate boardroom. So that bright, solar-illuminated future some of us continue to dream of, do please to remember that there are people out there. No, look, no hustler ever wants to see his customers get clean. Yeah, I know. You've been trying to get here. Take this one. This one's free. This is that. And while this is a Moran Monday nomination, by the same token, you got to kind of ask yourself who the Moran is. Because HECO is not doing this because they're stupid. They're doing it because they are goddamn greedy. And they are dedicated to the proposition that something in either the Bible or the Constitution guarantees them the right to get rich by burning up finite resources from the planet instead of taking advantage of all that sunlight that's got a good couple of billion years left in it. Randy says, ready to vote Mountain Party yet? Oh, I forgot. You have to be on the winning team or cast a defensive vote because we don't have instant runoff voting. Oh, hell, I've voted Mountain Party a bunch, Randy. Are you kidding? I've voted in Senate races, governor's races. We just don't, the Mountain Party just doesn't put too many candidates on the ballot. And sadly, they have thus far proven to be sort of, you know, vanity candidates designed to keep the Mountain Party on the ballot. I hope someday we'll have at least one member of the Mountain Party in the West Virginia House of Delegates and one in the Senate. I'd like to see a bunch of them, as a matter of fact. I'd like to see some Mountain Party candidates for county commission and dog catcher and library custodian, because that's where party building happens, actually. A note coming in from Robert in Australia. It's 10:50 p.m., December 31st here in Sydney, so it'll already be 2014 by the time I tune in tomorrow. So Happy New Year, whenever it starts, to all the Horn family. It's all arbitrary. Signed, Robert. And it is indeed. Isaac pointing out, meanwhile, President Obama is on vacation in Hawaii. Wonder if there's any solar panels on the house of the resident, on the roof of the residence. I don't know. From Ron and Raleigh, hey, wait a minute. I remember that the argument against allowing people to buy their own phones prior to phone company deregulation was that those non-AT&T phones would cause damage to AT&T's equipment. Well, at least the corporatists are recycling their ideas, Ron says. Well, they have to, Ron, because they never have any new ones. From Rob in Minnesota, subject line, ACA stress. People will be so stressed out trying to get health care through the ACA that they'll start to experience physical and mental symptoms requiring medical care. I feel for you and your family, Bob. Thank you. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate your sympathy. As one of my favorite movie lines goes, all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it. And this piece of good news, the note says, thanks to Darlene, and right back at her, Happy New Year to the Horn. That's from Dan, who matched Darlene. Now, if anyone would care to match Dan or some portion thereof, that would keep the ball rolling, and we'd actually have a fighting chance of getting between tonight and tomorrow night, staying out of the hole all December long. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. Oh, and a tale of two bots. I love this one. Last night I was reading around on a Sunday evening. I had just seen the happy news come in from Sandra that Mike Shanahan, the rat-faced bastard in Washington, was going to be getting his apple and roadmap from Dan Snyder. When I ran, and I was grinning merrily. He should have been gone last year after he tried to destroy RG3, but never mind. I don't hold grudges. I'm not a Redskins fan. The Redskins, Jesus. That team from Washington, sorry. But I saw this. I saw this story about how an MIT professor or student or someone got tired of fighting on Twitter with climate change deniers. Like I said, this is it's a story of two bots. It's a story of two uses of social media. And it works for Moran Monday because the impetus for what the MIT guy did was morons. He apparently liked to tweet about the science of climate change. And apparently every time he did so, up would pop some weirdo, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, strychnine-swilling, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking, Bible-believing, teabagging moron to repeat some talking point. Remember how I said a minute ago that they have to recycle their ideas because they've never had any original ones? Well, what this fellow at MIT noticed, and you can find the story over on my Facebook page, what he noticed is that because the morons among the climate deniers are incapable of engaging in their own actual self-generated thoughts, they tend to respond with the typical talking points pumped at them through places like the American Petroleum Institute and Friends of Coal and stuff like that. And after a while, he, being an MIT guy, was able to build a Twitter bot which then trolled the Twitterverse for idiots using typical climate change denier idiocy. And the bot would then, instead of this guy having part of his life stolen in useless arguments, the bot would then engage them instead and keep them busy. And I thought it a little stroke of genius. The deniers are such unoriginal, uncreative morons that you can spot them. And you can just set up a machine to argue with them because they're not worth human time. So I thought, hey, this is cute. And many of you did as well. Now, spin the planet a little ways around on its axis to Australia. And I was reminded of this when I saw Robert's note come in. And you find an entirely different type of bot. And an entirely different use of social media. I love this story. Turns out that oceanographers or ichthyologists or whomever they happen to be have begun tagging sharks for whom I maintain no general animosity. Sharks do what sharks do. They're part of the whole process. And human and shark interactions generally happen because humans have this thing about running into the water. I think it's maybe some sort of deep-seated evolutionary memory of the place from whence we came. But about 400 sharks have been fitted with transmitters that send out warnings via Twitter to the Surf Life-Saving Western Australia Twitter feed whenever they get close enough to potentially pose a hazard to folks in the water. Right. We're going to have to get a bigger boat. Here's one of the tweets. Fisheries advise 2-meter shark, unknown species, sighted between Floreat and City Beach, approximately 30 meters offshore at 12:20. Floreat and City Beach are closed. What a nice use of the technology. And it provides an opportunity for humans to use their big human brains to not get eaten by sharks. So on the one hand, technology is out there serving as basically a hanging ball of yarn for climate science deniers to bat at, while half a planet away, it's being used to keep humans from becoming chew toys for sharks. I like that. I like that a lot. So we are now 67 minutes into this Moran Monday. Note from our buddy Luta, noting that HECO is a monopoly on Oahu, the only electric utilities company in Hawaii, plus they are the only state that still uses oil to run their power plants. Yes, Hawaii is oil-fired. Now you see the stakes of the game, right? Luta continues, the Kahuku mountain ranges are littered with decrepit wind turbines that HECO squashed. Continues, I dealt with HECO for 12 years. They're very evil. Only the wealthy getting their pockets lined by them. Love HECO. Everybody else despises them. Yes, 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 I know, Marty. Hey, Shanahan got Denver its 2 Super Bowls. Thou, you and Sandra, shalt not speak ill of him. Oh, but we shall. He's a miserable human being. Oh, God, here we go again. Thanks, Frank. Hey, Bob, FYI, CNN just had a piece about 2 trains colliding head-on in North Dakota. Apparently one had loaded oil tank cars. Showed a massive fire burning. From Alabama to North Dakota. When did you ever expect to hear a sentence begin with from Alabama to North Dakota? Yeah, me either. Nobody's safe because, well, oil company profits matter more than human life itself. Charming, ain't it? And we're going to take a break. Thanks again to Darlene for putting her challenge on the table. Thanks to Sal for getting us started this evening, and thanks to Dan for answering it. Dan is now waiting for an answer to his own response. PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com, so too the traditional mail address. A little bit of a break, and your calls, 304-658-3333, or if you want to use the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either way is just fine by me. This is Conversation Radio on the day before the last day of this arbitrary 2013. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you for coming home. Sorry that the chairs are all warm. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, slowly being eaten away. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small.
Yeah, that was kind of hard to resist, and I can always count on Marty to sort of catch on to my momentary lapses into bad 80s pop, but still, one of my favorite band names of all time, Spandau Ballet. Took me a while to figure out what that meant, but, well, I can think of several folks I'd like to see dancing it, but never mind. This is the Horn, head on RadioNetwork.com, and Moran Monday. And I got a bunch more Morans. And I guess, I sort of inadvertently made myself the first nominee this evening. But still. But let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, how are you, sir?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
I'm here, still around, you know. That's one thing to be said.
Hail, hail.
Exactly. First, have you heard anything from Mr. Stress?
I had a brief update from Thomas over the weekend. Bill was able to get out and about a little bit, and I think it did him worlds of good.
Oh, that's the greatest therapy of all for somebody like him.
Amen.
Absolutely. To be confined and stuff like that, that's just absolutely horrible to be encased in the boredom and the sterility of a hospital situation in which you have so many people making decisions about you. And I don't think Mr. Stress is one who likes to have people tell him what to do and stuff like that.
You caught that along the way too, did you?
Oh yeah, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because in hospitals they can be extremely dictatorial and very mean spirited.
No fruit cup.
Well, I mean, you've just got a bunch of assholes who work there because they can't work anywhere else, and that's basically it. Point of fact, this is a strange thing. This lady called me tonight who doesn't have Medicare or anything. And I tried to get her to get on Medicare, but she says she's not eligible, and I'm not going to ask her why because it's her own personal business. But she went to the hospital, and they said they would not treat her because she was not able to be on Medicare, and that she was able to, by the ACA, to get on the health care exchange. And they sent her out the door sick from the ER.
I'm not surprised. Do you remember when that paragon of Christian mercy, Bishop Willard Romney, said, "Nobody in this country ever goes without health care, my friend." Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I've heard things from Obama, too, like, you know, nobody will do this, that, and the other. So, I mean, who can you trust, you know?
Some more than others. I mean, at least we didn't have that kind of it. Because the fact of the matter is, no hospital has any legal requirement other than to stabilize you. And if you're not unstable when you come in, there's nothing to stabilize, so they'll just boot your ass right back through the swinging doors.
Well, that's what I tried to tell her, but she couldn't understand that. And I said, you know, I'm very sorry. I hope you feel better.
What? I mean, well, Jim, I don't want to know any particulars, but how can you be 60? Maybe this is just my own ignorance. How can you be 65 in this country and not qualify for Medicare?
She's not 65.
Ah, well, that's...
So she just sort of falls right through the cracks. And apparently that's just that's what she told me. And she told me that it was because of the Affordable Care Act that she was denied care and stuff like that. And I said, well...
Well, that much is bunk.
I said, I cannot answer that, you know, and I had to end the call. I said, really, I have to go.
Yeah, because it's not a great leap from there to that Kenyan Muslim socialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people.
Well, whatever, you know, it's just people always have to blame somebody for something, and it's just the way it is.
Well, but why not, you know, why not go to the most obvious, Jim, the fact that these things are written... even the ones that are technically nonprofits are run to make money.
Well, they're in the hospital in this country or any type of insurance company that's, standing whose purpose is not to provide for their shareholders and, you know, their employees and that type thing. I mean, you go to a hospital, for example, and the things that you could buy in a drugstore, aspirin pills.
Oh, yeah, $100 aspirins, sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, I never could quite understand that.
Well, if you've ever laid there in the bed, watching the nurse peel the little barcode stickers off of whatever it is she's
done that, and
every time they peel one of those off, you're thinking, oh my God, that's more money. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Because that's, you know, it's all inventory control and profit flow management. I mean, there are lots of hospitals in this country, Jim, that are run as not-for-profit organizations. But not-for-profit doesn't mean to make money. For God's sakes, the Cleveland Clinic is run as a not-for-profit. That just speaks to their tax status, not their impetus in life.
Well, of course. And I don't think they even accept Medicare patients.
Cleveland Clinic?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, they do.
Well.
Oh, yes, they do.
Well, yeah.
They'll take most anything.
Well.
As long as you got something.
Right. But going back to this thing with the Affordable Care Act, well, first, this power company in Hawaii.
Yes.
And that's just like any other power company anywhere else in this country. I mean, they're in the business to make money, and they're extremely rapacious about it. I mean, you want to talk about sharks? I mean,
it was a nice segue, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, if ever I could take a comparison between sharks, and basically sharks are just these creatures who have to keep swimming and eating, because if they stop swimming, they'll die, because they'll die of suffocation.
Right.
Well, that's the way I look at a lot of these power companies and a lot of these hospitals and things of that nature. And basically, if they can't keep that inflow of cash coming to give to whomever, their shareholders or, like I said before, employees and CEOs that get these six-figure bonuses and stuff like that, then they will die. That's just the way they are. They are no longer what they used to be, like 30 years ago. You know, in which they would, you know, help people and try to go beyond stabilizing somebody. And if a person is really sick, they will, you know, hospitalize them. And, you know, try to at least
stabilize.
Well, more than stabilize. I mean, you know, beyond stability, you've got to have some type of care which will enable them to, you know, walk out instead of being carried out in a wheelchair just because of law. Because I know they have to take you out in a wheelchair because of insurance regulations. What I'm saying is beyond the wheelchair at the exit. But that's just the thing. As far as I'm concerned, they're all sharks, and it's really bad. And I don't see it getting much better. And as far as the ACA is concerned, now, I thought, and I'm just asking you for information only.
Sure.
That you had basically said one of the better things about it would be, number one, no asset testing. Number two, expansion of Medicare.
Well, Medicaid. That is the best thing about the ACA.
Or Medicaid.
Right.
But that did not occur here, right?
No. No, this is a monumental screw-up.
Well, where's the screw-up, please?
The guy who filled out the form on the phone with me.
Uh-huh.
Because the only way that Agnes and I, for instance, don't qualify for some kind of subsidy on the for-profit end of it is if, as Jay Cruzan noted, we're pulling down 80 grand a year. We're not. Not by a long shot. Can't even see it from here. So consequently, there's a mess up. And like I said, I checked in regarding West Virginia with somebody who knoweth of whence he speaketh earlier today. And he said, yeah, there's at least 7,500 people out there who are Medicaid eligible, whose applications were so thoroughly screwed up that they've got to be completely redone.
Well,
so the way that, but to go back to your question, the way the Medicaid expansion is supposed to work, it is strictly income based. You are either 138% or less of the federal poverty limit, in which case you qualify for the Medicaid expansion, or you're not, in which case you don't. The asset testing is gone.
Well,
and by, but understand what asset testing means, Jim. Asset testing is not the same thing as means testing. Means testing is how much money do you make, and that is still there.
Well, I understand that.
Asset testing is, do you have a cardboard box to crawl under in it when it rains? In which case, in many states, that would keep, that would in former years have kept you from qualifying for Medicaid. So,
well,
let's say you work 20 hours a week for minimum wage down at the Rippy Mart. If you have anything under the old law, if you had anything in the way of property, personality.
Well, I'm saying that.
Not even talking about realty. I'm talking about personality. Then that would have kept you out of Medicaid.
Well, now the way it worked in South Carolina with a friend who was dying with AIDS, he had a small house, wasn't any grand mansion or anything like that, but he was so happy to get it. And when he signed up for the Medicaid program there, then it was understood that his real property would be sold back to the state of South Carolina to reimburse for services rendered under Medicaid.
That does happen, yes, or it has happened in the past.
And I think it's probably going to happen in the future, to tell you the truth.
I know, for instance, in terms of elder law, once upon a time, back when I was busy learning about it, there was a 13-month look forward and a 13-month look back for a total of 26 months. For instance, when an elder would enter nursing home care.
Right.
And if they were entering nursing home care and just had their house and nobody was living with them and they hadn't made arrangements for the person in exchange for, say, services rendered to receive the house, then
it would revert to the,
it would be subject to that look back.
Well, now they've revised that, in which you have to, I think, 5 years ahead to transfer all your real assets.
Yeah, they may have expanded the window.
But
in the cases of catastrophic illness such as HIV or even cancer, that's a different subsection of Medicaid.
Well,
because that's for care for people who are essentially terminal.
Well,
whereas the Medicaid expansion that we're discussing here is health insurance for people who are not terminal. So the goal as it was laid out in the beginning was to provide a means of access to some kind of health care for people who would not have either the means or who would not have the means to participate in for-profit insurance, because the premiums would still be too high for them to pay.
So you're referring to the health care exchanges?
No, the Medicaid expansion was for the working poor.
No, but you're referring to the Medicaid, the insurance exchanges that they're offering under ACA, correct? And that's where they place you and your spouse.
Yeah, that's the tender mercies of the for-profit health insurance industry. So,
and as you explained it, that in this situation, just not you, but other people, in your situation, as far as you don't, these people do not qualify for Medicaid?
Well, I don't know, because everybody I've been able to consult with says this is a monumental screw up. This is not how it's supposed to work. Because, for instance, there's that language in my decision letter that says your state has chosen not to extend Medicaid to people like you. And who knows what that means?
Well, I can tell you exactly what it means.
It certainly, because people like me are not, you know, making $80,000 a year, and therefore not even entitled to a subsidy from the for-profit insurance.
Well, don't you think it refers to also property and stuff like that?
No, it doesn't.
Well,
that's specifically the point of the no more asset testing.
Well, this is a very complex law, 1,500 pages long, and who knows what's in it, and who knows what they're going to pull out of it to basically...
Well, I'm kind of in the dark about a big chunk of it, but I've made a point of studying the Medicaid expansion because it is a form of universal single-payer health care and is therefore something that I believe in deeply.
Oh, yeah, that's a good program. Nonetheless, you've gone through an appeals process.
I will be. And I'm just, you know, I'm going to dig out my copy of Bleak House to keep me company while I go through it, Jim.
Well,
I'm not sure if I'm Jarndyce or Jarndyce.
Well, it is very Dickensian, that's for sure. But nonetheless, that's a...
But understand, in this state, for instance, among other things, the governor of this state agreed to take the Medicaid expansion in a way that could only be described as grudgingly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, well, you know, it's from that one. And so his administration has done next to nothing to explain to people who might be eligible that it's out there for them. Meanwhile, the Department of Health and Human Resources, who have to operate at his will and pleasure, are busting their humps to try to get people enrolled.
And basically, you think that perhaps they have been guidance, not at federal level, but at state level, to make it as difficult as possible?
No, I don't think the DHHR has, because after all, my application was not filled out by any, you know, like I said, I was 0 for 14. I had gotten all the way to the end of it. It said, you're done.
Right.
But then it said, your application's not complete. And this was a software nightmare. It was, oh, God. So after 45 minutes on hold, Jim, I finally got this dude who said, yeah, I'll fix it. And he went in. And I have no idea what he did to it, but he fixed it real good.
To the contrary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you...
And that's federal, Jim. That's not somebody at the state level. That's one of these contractors that has been brought in at the last moment and thrown into this miserable process, probably with next to no training, shitty pay, and certainly not enough... very similar to Darlene's story out of Connecticut from a couple of weeks ago.
Well, you know, it's a strange thing. Number one, I'm very sorry you're having all these problems. That's terrible. But just to give you another example, over the holidays, I received a couple gift certificates from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called the number up and talked to these people and this, that, and the other. And I said, oh, yeah, you're fixed up. You're ready to go. It's in your account. Three people. And so I would call back to check because being the old bureaucrat that I used to be, you can't take anybody's word for anything, period. Unless you check on them, unless you escalate it to the point of a supervisor. And in such terms that when you talk to this idiot who doesn't know what they're talking about, you don't do this or I'm going to make you wish that I was never born. Now you can do this or I'll have your ass. And I had to do that three times before Amazon would, you know, And I didn't want to play on the computer. I wanted to use their manpower and see exactly, because people were talking about how Amazon could handle the ACA better than the way it's being handled. Forget it. But finally, when I got through with those people, not only did they give me the certificates, but expanded certificates. Because I told them, I said, number one, my time is worth money. And you've cost me a lot of time and money and aggravation, and I don't fucking appreciate it. And I said, I will follow through with this. I will escalate this to the highest level I possibly can. And somebody is going to come see you, and they're not going to come see you with a cup of coffee. Have a nice day.
Click.
Now, I'm the one that did the click. Because, I mean, half the people you get, and at least, you know, with Amazon, you're going to get some idiot overseas who can't even understand English, much less even, reply in business English or whatever. So, I mean, that's the way it is. But, you know, being a former federal employee, I've dealt with contractors and stuff like that, and how the people they hire, they're the ones they scrape off the streets for little or nothing, no benefits, and all they're doing is sitting there occupying a chair, looking at the clock, waiting to see.
Hey, look, Jim, I've done call center work. And it's an ugly business. And the thing is, management only gives you, I mean, you can't get outside your box. You can only meander through a certain number of screens. And if the answer's not on those screens, well, sorry. And I've done both inbound and outbound, and it's, I'm not mean to telemarketers. I'm very polite to them. I said, please, I understand this is your job. Do not ever call me back. And generally it works, but by the same token, there are things that they simply cannot do. The best that they can do is escalate to a manager, and the manager knows probably even less because they don't do the work.
Well, that's where you have to escalate the thing, and you have to take it, to whatever level is necessary. And that's been my experience with working with large organizations like that, because you have a lot of people who really, I don't think they really care. Because number one, a lot of these things have been outsourced overseas to the point that you can't get a person who will speak English properly or understand business English. As I said before, that, you may as well be talking to the wall.
And they are at least within the parameters of the people answering the phone at healthcare.gov. They are apparently employing American citizens, which I think is
kind of
critical.
Well, thank God for that. You get somebody who can.
But they still don't have any means of understanding all the ins and outs, and the website is still bizarre.
Well, Bob, how can you expect somebody who is employed by a contractor to answer your questions on healthcare.gov or whatever?
Right. Well, I consider
to even understand the intricacies of a 1,500-page law that most of the people who put it together in D.C. don't understand what it means, other than the fact that it is a cash cow for the insurance industry, and it's going to deny the people who need it the most and give you these wonderful policies.
Well, I mean, government contract, and consider what that scenario probably is, Jim. Person gets hired. Lord only knows what they were doing the day before they were hired. Maybe they've got some call center experience. Maybe they don't. Maybe they were selling. Maybe they've got some insurance experience.
They're not required.
Maybe they don't.
They're not vetted people.
No, they're hired. They're simply people who are hired by a contractor who is paying the lowest possible wage. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because this maximizes the amount that goes into the contractor's pocket.
All right.
And once again, we come back around to that thing that you and I and others have discussed on a number of occasions, and that is the fact that this is a function of the liquidation of the functions of government for purposes of the aggrandizement and wealth enrichment of the beloved, much vaunted, seldom competent private sector.
Of course, that's the nature of it.
Because in 2013, Jim, the purpose of government is to provide money to already wealthy people.
I mean, why do you think these people compete for these contracts from all these agencies? And why do you think there has been a complete and utter path toward the declination of the civil service? That basically what you're going to have and what they want to have in civil service positions are CORs, contracting officers representatives. That's exactly what they're looking for. And they want to...
And you're saying the bar for that is pretty low?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that, but I can say this. I used to be one. My bar was pretty high, and I don't consider that referencing to me, but I know how it works, and I know what they're trying to do, and I know what they try, you know.
If the job you're filling is to answer phones from people who are hopelessly confused by a disastrous website, that's going to be a pretty low bar, isn't it?
Well, yeah, they have to be, absolutely. I mean, the first thing they did, the wrong thing they did was, number one, Bob, is to not understand the law. That's the first mistake they ever made when Obama put it into effect, or before he signed that damn bill. He, of course, should have had enough people who could advise him on the salient points of the law and how it should be implemented.
Well, see, this is where you and I diverge. I think they understood it very well. The purpose of the law was to transfer vast amounts of the wealth of the body politic into the pockets of the for-profit healthcare insurance industry without the for-profit healthcare insurance industry having to deliver much in return. That's the purpose.
Well, what did I just tell you? I just said this is a cash cow for the for-profit insurance agency. That's exactly what it is. And basically, unless you're covered by other insurance under a group plan and stuff like that, and you're put out there in the marketplace, well, that's not very comforting to me. And when I read parts of the law, and it was explained to me by people who in Washington who knew a little bit about what was, they weren't real happy about it as far as the consumer is concerned, because basically what it does is just kind of just put people out into a nest of alligators. That's exactly what one guy told me. That was the analogy he used.
Well, right now, all the news is about, I mean, there, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have signed up in the month of December.
Well, they had expected to have 3 million signed up by now. I think it's only like 1 million now. Or whatever.
Well, there were like 800,000 in this month.
Well, they said 1 million. I guess, you know, round them off, why not? Well, what's 200,000 people, right?
A statistic.
Exactly. That's the thing. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. But nonetheless, you know, I have a lot of problems with the way this thing was implemented, rolled out, and, of course, it was designed to basically throw a lot of people at the mercy of voracious insurance companies, sharks, and, okay, you have it, but you've got to afford it. And if you can't afford it, aloha on a steel guitar.
Yeah, I mean, there are other questions out there. What happens if you don't meet your premium payment? You're not covered.
Well,
what do you have to do then to get recovered?
Well, I mean, that's going to be a bit of a sticky wicket. But as far as the implementation, for example, in this state is concerned, I mean, you said there is a disconnect or a screw up. I mean, what?
Well, the screw where I'm concerned, Jim, the screw up was not, and I don't mean what I think. In my case, the screw up is not in West Virginia. The screw up is on the federal end.
Okay, I ask how so?
Because the guy who screwed up my application was not in West Virginia. He was another call center dude for healthcare.gov. You got a bank of people who answer questions for Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, West Virginia, and you got another who answers questions for Montana, Mississippi, yada, 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 yada.
I understand that.
Right.
Is there any place where you can physically go down to and sit down and talk to a person and fill out your application and deal with that individual on a, you know, face-to-face basis, paper and pencil?
No.
No? It all has to be done either.
Well, I mean, for instance, if you are a real Luddite, they will mail you the application, you fill out the application, and mail it back to them, and they will mail you the determination.
Well, it would appear to me as though, that as part of the implementation of the law, that they would have provided, particularly in this state, a place where people could go down, as they would to the Social Security Administration or whatever.
Well, there are elements of that that are already in place.
Wait.
I mean, for instance, you can, like through the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources, you can go in there, maybe at the time of your benefits review, and they'll say, hey, maybe you're going to be eligible for the Medicaid expansion. Yeah, that'll happen. Now, another element of that, that is at least semi-local. I filled out my appeal documents, I downloaded my appeal documents, and there's a weird little box that you check off there that says, "Would you prefer to have your appeal?" And this is like for the expanded Medicaid. Would you prefer to have your appeal handled inside your state or by a marketplace representative? And see, there's something about that word marketplace that just sort of curdles on my stomach as it is.
Understood, but I mean, could you not go down to an office somewhere and tell them what you are seeking, which is Medicaid expansion as envisioned under the law, and you know, with no property attachments or whatever? Can you, to me, that would be a lot more effective than just sending things back and forth.
Well, this kind of goes back to our discussion the other night about Ferg's birthday and going physically to the post office and filling out the form for Selective Service Registration. I got several notes saying, "Well, Bob, you could have done that online." I wanted it to be a physical process for him.
I don't understand that.
Well, I do, and I had my reasons. I wanted it to be. I didn't want it to be just another set of boxes that he clicked online.
Well, you know,
I wanted him to have the gravity of understanding that the government was requiring him to register to be slaughtered in the name of the country. So that was, you know, I wanted, and so in that same vein, yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to go to a government representative in the appropriate department and try to sit down with them. Whether they're equipped to answer the questions, I don't know.
Well, I can tell you this. There's a hell of a lot of difference between being a voice on the telephone or an e-message through the web or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I learned that the hard way.
They're physically present.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
And then if that person does not give you satisfaction when you're there physically present for you to demand to see their supervisor, or someone who can at least give you a satisfactory answer.
Right. When I was on the phone, Jim, I heard the guy. He would periodically say, "Wait just a minute. I got to wait for this page to load." And I'd say, "Wait," and he would ask me questions that I'd already answered on my own form online. And I'd say, "Wait a minute. Are you just going back through my application?"
Yeah, I'm sure.
And he said, "Well, yeah. That's the only thing I can do." And then he goes, okay, you've been approved. And so we were never able to go, you know, what kind of magic did you do? And now I find out.
That he didn't do anything at all.
No, he did something.
But you did not achieve your objective.
No, but he achieved his of getting me approved to be cast to the wolves of, well, we like wolves, cast to the sharks in the for-profit marketplace.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. You know, like I say, sometimes you have to go down and sit there and face-to-face with these people. And there is a difference, you know, if you can possibly do it, between talking with someone on the phone and going down there and being physically present. It will be worth your while if you have a 50% chance, either you will or you won't, be approved for what you're trying to, find. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And so, at some point in time, I'll spend a day or maybe two or God knows, but, you know, this purgatory, trying to get these questions answered.
Well,
But as far as the appeal is concerned, I'm damn sure not going to let it be handled by the marketplace. You know, dead moving hand of Milton Friedman and all of that.
May I ask who will handle your appeal?
I don't know. I just checked the box that says I want it handled in my state.
Well,
or by a state agency. I assume it'll be DHHR.
I would not assume. I would find out who would be handling that appeal. And you have the right to ask that. And you need to really put somebody's feet to the fire and, if necessary, become such a pain in the ass to them that they're going to say, well, look, I want to get this guy out of my hair or whatever it takes to make hell grant.
I mean, I know where the building is, and I know where to take the number and where to sit down.
Well, I wish you luck in that, and I would suggest that you do it because I know it's very important to you, and that's something you just don't want to leave into the voice of somebody on the phone or some type of screen on your computer, because in spite of these marvelous things that we have to communicate, either by voice or by whatever, they just don't work.
No, it's fine and good for some things, not so much for others.
Well, it's great to send you an email. It's great to request whatever. It's great for Amazon to, send you whatever you're looking for, but I have time in their case. I mean, for example, I ordered a book. They sent me two. And so I had to get on the phone, go back with them, and this, that, and the other. What I'm trying to point out is it's just become so overburdened and overladen with all these so-called electronic means and things of that nature that it really, as it crowns, so it crucifies. When it works, it's great. But when it doesn't, it can be a real pain in the ass.
It's a booger. Well, Jim, have yourself a good evening. Enjoyed the conversation.
Well, I'm sure you.
And I'm glad you were. I'm glad you were able to get satisfaction out of Amazon.
Well, the reason I brought them up is because people were saying, "Well, if only Amazon had handled this program, it would be so much different." And I told this lady that, and she said, "You know, that's the truth." Okay. Well, listen. Have a good evening and the rest of the program.
Well, I will try. I will try, and enjoy your stuff when it arrives.
it's already been here and gone, basically. I mean, and the funny thing about it is when Amazon said, well, we're going to send somebody up there to pick it up 2 days from now, there was a guy from UPS beating on my door that afternoon. So you just don't understand.
Well, Amazon is trying to dig its way. Amazon and FedEx, well, Amazon in particular, is trying to dig its way out of a big hole over because of Christmas, because their on-time Christmas delivery turned out to be not.
Well, I can tell you one thing about, and I'm not trying to report one thing or the other before I go. I don't deal with FedEx anymore. Will not have anything to do with those people. And my problem with them was about 3 or 4 years ago. And FedEx now is starting to send what they call FedEx Smart Post. But I got a hold of one real asshole at FedEx. And he asked me, what language are you speaking in? Just being, you know, shit. And I said, M16.
That sounds fun.
They don't deliver here anymore, nor will I have them deliver here anymore, period. I choose UPS, and they're good. They're a lot better than FedEx, that's for damn sure. Let me get off here. You got other people want to talk to you.
All right, you take care, Jim.
Out here.
Bye now. I get the sense that Jim really does know how to deal with intransigent folks on the phone. Got a note in from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line: you'll like this. I've kind of learned to duck when Ron sends me something like that. Hey Bob, you've often said that the goddess of irony has a wicked sense of humor. She is laughing up the sleeve of her toga here in North Carolina. Stan, the Republican majority here has now. This is the same North Carolina that had a hissy last week about, you know, them NAACP's wanting to protest on our grass in front of the and there might be lawn chairs. You remember it wasn't Foghorn Leghorn? Yeah. The Republican majority here has instituted a flat tax, which is, oh, they are serious, aren't they? The Republican majority here has instituted a flat tax, which has required a new revenue department software to calculate the tax. Guess who these poltroons hired to write the new software? That's right, CGI. The same software geniuses who made the healthcare.gov website. The software doesn't work. So they're trying to patch the old software. We've gone from three tax brackets, 6%, 7%, and 7.75%, down to a 5.8% flat tax. The old trickle-down, less taxes mean more revenue BS. So, Bob, keep an eye on North Carolina as the Republican majority burns this state to the ground. But that's how government contracting works. If you have spectacularly screwed up one thing, well, by God, hire them. They'll probably screw up even bigger next time. And then you know what we can do? We can say that government don't work. That government's never created a job. Convenient, huh? Let's pay a quick visit to Texas, Stan. And how about Representative Steve Stockman? Yeah, anytime he opens his mouth, you know it's going to be a dandy. Teabagger, Steve Stockman. Never wants to miss out on a good fundraising opportunity. Steve Stockman sent out a Dear Fellow Patriot letter to try to get in on the back of Duck Doofus so as to make some money off of that millionaire. Dear Patriot, I'm fuming. As you may know, the A&E Network has indefinitely suspended Duck Dynasty star Phil Robertson for sharing what the Bible says about homosexuality. Stand. Oh, Jesus Christ. It goes on, however. the story I'm looking at from Americans Against the Tea Party's Nick Goroff notes that Stockman has made himself infamous for promoting campaign bumper stickers, which read, "If babies had guns, they wouldn't be aborted." Well, he tweeted out a photo of his hand lubricating his semi-automatic assault rifle with a homemade label over it, you know, gun oil, with the little WD-40, you know, straight straw nozzle on it there for accurate positioning of the lubricant. Yeah, he tweeted the fake label on it, on the hand that's lubricating the firearm, says, "The best gun lubricant around." The label on the can reads, "Liberal Tear." Yeah, liberal tears. He likes it when the mommies of shot-up babies cry, because that's the best gun lubricant. Liberal tears. Aren't you proud of him, Texas? Doesn't he make you just want to stand a little bit taller in your Tony Lamas? Or your Lucchese's? The best gun lubricant. Liberal tears. Wow. It's 2 minutes past the hour. We've entered the third hour of this night before the night before New Year's Eve program. And your calls are, of course, more than welcome. Jump right in, 304-658-3333. On Skype, the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Yeah. Hey, thanks to Ed. Ed just answered a big part of Dan's previous answer to Darlene's challenge this evening. So that means that Dan's portion of the challenge now only lacks $70 to go. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. We're trying to finish December to the good. Yes, I'm looking for a bumper. Let's see if this is what I'm after. Maybe it is. So, jump right in. The conversation is fine. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun. with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. From 66 and 7 they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee-deep in gore. Days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson Gunner, Roland the Thompson Gunner. His comrades fought beside him, Van Owen and the rest, but of all the Thompson Gunners, Roland was the best. So the CIA decided they wanted Roland dead. That son of a bitch Van Owen blew off Roland's head. Roland the headless Thompson. Stalking through the night in the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. Roland searched the continent for the man who'd done him in. He found him in Mombasa, in a ballroom drinking gin. Roland aimed his Thompson gun. He didn't say a word, but he blew Van Owen's body from there to Johannesburg. Roland the headless Thompson gunner. Roland the headless Thompson gunner. The headless Thompson gunner, talking about the man. Rolling the headless Thompson gunner, the eternal Thompson gunner, still wandering through the night. Now it's 10 years later, but it still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, and Eddie Hurst heard the birth of a Roland Thompson gun and body.
What a lovely little gun song, huh? 8 minutes past the hour, this is the Horn. Moran Monday, and hey look, a Moran. Gotta love them. I wonder how Steve Stockman feels about this guy's tears. Because he is sure God a Moran of the First Order with poison ivy clusters. The sad thing is, there's a little bit of a news fail going on here. Because we don't learn exactly where this happened, but I'm guessing it's not in some liberal wonderland. You know, if you're a guy, and, well, no, that's sexist. If you can get past the odious nature of the corporate management of the organization, Home Depot can be a hell of a lot of fun to walk around, as can Lowe's or, you know, any of those other, you know, hey, look, oh, wow, that'd be a nice shower. That's an awesome shower fixture. Look at that toilet. Man, Oh, man, I bet you could launch the space shuttle with the computer inside that refrigerator. Yeah. So our freedom-protecting, lawful, awful gun owner goes to Home Depot. Thanks to Tony for this. Sent it to me earlier via Facebook. You can do that, too, you know, Facebook, Bob Kincaid. I don't know where this happened, and it bothers me. But nonetheless, from beforeitsnews.com, our friend had a concealed carry permit. And naturally, when you're a freedom protector and you need to conceal, you'll need to conceal carry because you never know just where the terrorists or the liberal hating freedom unlovers are going to be. They might be standing right there looking at the paint samples in the Home Depot. So when you get to sent to Home Depot for a bag of pot and soil or who knows what, well, you want to make sure you take, you're able to protect freedom at the Home Depot. Now, nobody looked at this guy and gave him a steely gaze and said, "Draw." No. No, our friend, the freedom protector here, just reached for his wallet. "Reach for it." "I don't want to, mister." "Pick up the wallet." So he reaches for his wallet and shoots himself in the ass instead. He'll survive. He'll be okay. The injuries were described as minor. I would say the injury to his pride is probably major. "Hey, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, come on over here, Cephas. Sit down at the bar and have a beer." "Oh, wait. You can't sit down. You shot yourself in the ass." "Well, you can just stand here and have a beer." "No, we don't want to stand with you and have a beer either. You're kind of embarrassing." Maybe it's a wise thing not to carry on your wallet on the same side as you carry your freedom protector. And where was it? Sears, Kmart, Wally World, out in California a month or so ago. Another guy shot himself in the arm or something. Don't laugh. He's a patriot. He was willing to take a bullet to make sure that freedom wasn't free in Home Depot. Do you get the idea that with these morons, maybe there should be just a little bit more detail involved in their ascertainment of training before the thing gets issued, the concealed freedom protecting permit? Is this where we are in America now? It used to be you'd hear over the intercom system in the grocery store, hardware store. Rodney, we got a clean up on aisle 6. Bunch of broken light bulbs. Careful now, Rodney. I remember one time I was a kid, and we were walking through Kroger's, and my sister had a thing for Coca-Cola, just loved her Coca-Cola. This was back when you still brought bottles back to the grocery store, and so we had dropped our bottles off, and we were walking down the pop aisle, and I mean, in the middle of the aisle, not touching anything, me or her, and all of a sudden a Coke bottle just exploded and laid her ankle open to the bone. And Next thing you know, they were sitting her down in the aisle and bringing ice from the meat department to help staunch the flow of blood. These things happen in my family. And the manager came over, "We're awful sorry. We're going to talk to that Coca-Cola fella. I don't know why that thing would have blowed up like that." I mean, this was the thick glass returnable bottles. And yeah, it was shrapnel. Glassnel. And no, nobody got paid off. And no, no. I mean, how often could that possibly happen? A pop bottle explode and cut your sister's ankle open in the Kroger down there on the soda pop aisle. You got to think that's pretty rare. And in point of fact, it is considerably rarer than going to Home Depot and finding some freedom protector shooting himself in the butt. Because that's 2013 America. Yeah, you're right, sentient. Sentient being in the chat room, home despot. Sparky says, "Home Depot is the only place I can go now that the hardware store closed this month." Well, just be careful, Sparky. You never know when somebody's going to think that freedom needs protecting. And I guess if you were really a teabagging, patriotic American, Wolverines, you'd want to keep your protecting, freedom protecting firearm there next to your wallet, because I mean, well, you can have my wallet when you pry it from my cold dead fingers. Yeah, I get it. Stock and Larry, Bob, the West wasn't won with a registered soda bottle, is all I'm saying. God bless you, Larry. Truly, you are a patriotic merkin. The stupid. It burns. Morans. And we have them in wild abundance. Who's the moran in this story? You pick. It has been announced, scientists have announced, you know, the active form of verbs is always better than the passive, stronger language. Scientists have announced that there is an approximately, and these are scientists in Canada, as reported by the Vancouver Sun, there is a nearly 7,500 square mile ring of mercury around the tar sands hell zone. Mercury. Environment Canada researcher Jane Kirk presented her findings at an international toxicology conference. The 7,500-mile ring is, quote, currently impacted by airborne mercury emissions originating from oil sands developments. Oh, that's going to have a big payoff. That's going to have a bigger payoff than the oil, than the oil goop itself will. In a sort of negative sense, here in about 10, 15, 20, 30 years. I bear great fondness for our friends in Canada. And I grieve for you because it appears that you've got the sort of hosehead equivalent to George W. Bush running your country right now. I saw some sort of an announcement the other day that, well, by golly, the Canadian government's approved a new pipeline. And I think this one's going to go across the country. We're not talking about something coming down here to, you know, heading for Houston. Oh, no. 7,500-mile ring of mercury. Because everybody loves mercury. I mean, that Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland, wasn't he funny? And who was it? Rosanna Dana, who used to say, if it's not one thing, it's another. No, I am not going to use the village peoples in the Navy for this because it is all too grave and way too serious. EcoWatch reporting a story relating to the crew members from the USS Ronald Reagan. Now, devotees of the Goddess of Irony would say that maybe it would have been a good idea never to name a ship the USS Ronald Reagan. But we did. And it was the USS Ronald Reagan that was among the first on the scene, great, big, humongous, giant aircraft carrier that it is, that was first on the scene when the Fukushima Daiichi TEPCO reactor complex decided to get sideways with the universe back in 2011. This story noting that at least 71 crew members from the USS Ronald Reagan, and notes that many of them are in their 20s, have suffered varying, but really, is there a mild degree of radiation sickness? Because of the fact that TEPCO, better living through radiation, TEPCO lied outright, straight up. Just flat out lied. To the Navy about how bad the nuclear radiation at the site of the disaster was. You know, ships don't necessarily, they don't have these big units that just slam hydrogen and oxygen atoms together to make water. Ships have to take on water. And the USS Ronald Reagan took on water while answering the distress call from Fukushima. When the water was introduced into the water circulation systems aboard the USS Ronald Reagan, the entire ship's supply became radiated. Sailors drank it. Crew members washed in it. They brushed their teeth with radioactive water. Of the 70-plus sailors identified who are trying to sue TEPCO, at least half of them already have cancer. Their lawyer is a man by the name of Paul Garner. He says, we're seeing leukemia, testicular cancer, and unremitting gynecological bleeding requiring transfusions and other intervention. Also, according to this account, Senior Chief Michael Seaborn was a radiation decontamination officer, and he was assigned to test the aircraft carrier. He said radiation levels aboard the USS Ronald Reagan were 300 times higher than what was considered safe at one point during the process. Radioactive snow fell on the USS Ronald Reagan. It wasn't really snow. It was radioactive debris that had frozen in the cold air of the Pacific and came down as precipitated out frozen solid. Sailor Lindsey Cooper said, "We joked about it. Hey, it's radioactive snow." She said, "My thyroid is so out of whack that I can lose 60 to 70 pounds in 1 month and then gain it back the next. My menstrual cycle lasts for 6 months at a time, and I cannot get pregnant." The sailors aboard the USS Ronald Reagan were not able to activate the multi-million dollar radiation detection system in time. Then she said, "And then we couldn't go anywhere. Japan didn't want us in port. Korea didn't want us. Guam turned us away. We floated in the water for 2.5 months. These sailors aren't suing the Navy. They're not suing the government. They're not suing the Defense Department. They're suing the gang of screw-ups who caused the problem in the first place, the Tokyo Electric Power Company." Co-counsel Charles Bonner noted that the second largest office outside of Tokyo for Tokyo Electric Power is in Washington, D.C. You know, it's frustrating enough when we use the might of this country to go and try to bomb brown people into submission, see Afghanistan. But the fact of the matter is, these sailors were on a mission of mercy, a mission of rescue. And they were poisoned for their troubles. Of course, they are by no means the only people poisoned. Death is stalking the land in especially in the Fukushima area. And if it only affected the human beings, maybe we'd say, well, you know, it's a human invention. We never should have fooled with it. It's on us. That would be a very shallow thing to say. But no, it's affecting the whole world. Bluefin tuna being shipped from Japan to Canada are damn near glowing in the dark with massive increases in radiation. Radioactive debris from Fukushima has passed Hawaii and is rapidly approaching the American western coastline. And why? You know the answer as well as I do. For a buck! Because those piece-of-crap reactors that were built in Fukushima were built to increase the share profits of shareholders and the salaries of directors and CEOs, even though the whole time they were there, they were just failures waiting to happen. Jim notes, radiation sickness is like pregnancy. You either have it in degrees or not, with future ramifications and consequences. Oh, my God, Jim says. The water supply? Yes, Jim, the water supply. Now, compared to something like the USS Ronald Reagan, the aircraft carrier, which was the biggest of its time, the aboard which my father served in the Second World War, well, the Essex is dwarfed by something the size of the Reagan. If you ever go to the Aviation Museum in Pensacola, Florida, there's a side-by-side of an Essex-class carrier sitting next to the modern class of nuclear carrier, and it's barely a third of the size. But nonetheless, it doesn't matter insofar as there are some jobs aboard any seagoing vessel that are dirty jobs. And the one thing you want at the end of your shift is to get cleaned up. According to my father, you really learn to appreciate the simple pleasures in life. One of those is just a shower. And so there are some 50 or so people out of a group of 70 or more who, because they swore an oath to their country and happened to be aboard that ill-fated ship, were poisoned, quite possibly to death, because all they wanted was a shower. And because the sickening greed heads of the Tokyo Electric Power Company lied about the harm involved. Texas T in the chat room says, if our Pacific wildlife isn't wearing our tires or choking on our plastic because of the Texas-sized plastic island swirling in the Pacific, now we have glow-in-the-dark tuna. Sorry, Bob, but goddamn. Well, thank you for getting to that before I did, Texas T. Indeed. And some of this stuff, as any, for instance, as anybody who has who lived through Hiroshima and Nagasaki can tell you, there comes a time when people who survived a disaster like that begin to look at the ones who were vaporized instantly as the lucky ones. I don't know if I'll still be doing anything like this 20 years from now. Somebody will. And 20 years from now, when these 20-somethings, if they've lived that long, are approaching 50-somethings, maybe there will be a news story about the mysterious cancer cluster aboard the USS Ronald Reagan among its crew. How the hell do you decontaminate a giant-ass nuclear aircraft carrier? I don't know. I really don't know what the science to that is. That was not a rhetorical question. What do you say to the 71 sailors? Well, kid, you signed up. You stuck your hand in the air. You took the oath. Tough stuff. Waggy in the chat room says, I used to teach post-strike radiation protection in the U.S. Air Force. It's a grim business indeed, I can well imagine. Tuna, people, everything under the sun. It takes a while for nature, of which we are a part, whether we admit it or not, it takes a while for nature to prepare the bill for something like the foolhardiness of nuclear energy. But Jesus, when nature delivers that bill, mother, it's a steep one. And generally speaking, it's a bill that no one expected that would ever be that high. And by the way, if you're not on the Pacific coast, don't feel too smug. It'll get to the other side in time. I saw a map the other day that showed that radiation monitors are largely, well, in many cases, going quite batshit on the West Coast all the way up to Alaska. But here's the fun part. They're reading high levels in St. Louis and Lexington, Kentucky, and Milwaukee. And all over the so-called heartland. Jesus. And you combine that with the miserable business of trying to battle back disease. And what a sick little trip through the funhouse that has just got to be. Lordy. And, you know, one story doesn't necessarily touch another, but it's hard not to talk about sailors aboard the USS Ronald Reagan without talking about the people who already and continue to die in Japan, without talking about all the radiation that's, 300 tons of radioactive water per minute entering the Pacific Ocean? I mean, I know, it's a big-ass ocean, but still, 300 tons of highly radioactive water entering a big-ass ocean over time is still a lot of radiation. And as far as radiation goes, we're still having a hard time sorting out what a safe dose is. Remember the report about the calibration of CT scanners from a year or so ago? The study that came out that showed that the dose out of you get out of one CT scanner could be 2, 3, 4 times as high as the dose you get out of another. And the only conclusion that was drawable out of that was the fact that in about 20 years or so time, this country is going to have an absolute explosion of radiation-induced cancers from CT scanners that were either poorly manufactured, poorly maintained, poorly calibrated, or for whom the training was altogether too little. Now, couple that with a story that's running around the interweb tubes these days, the story of a 20-year-old man who had a bum appendix, and this past October had to have it out, and then he got the bill in October, and he posted the medical bill online. Here's what for-profit health insurance gets you. The 20-year-old's appendectomy was billed at $55,000. Here's the happy Obamacare story. Because he was still on his dad's insurance, that bill was reduced to $11,000. His two-hour stay in the outpatient recovery room came to $7,500. And it goes on like this. But what's interesting is that when the story began circulating, people began responding from all over the world. Here's one of the responses. Aussie here, had appendicitis a few years ago, went into hospital, stayed 3 to 4 nights after the operation until my fever went down. Never saw a bill. Even had a follow-up appointment a month later to make sure everything was going okay. We pay a few hundred dollars a year extra on our taxes as a levy for our Medicare system, less if we have some kind of private health insurance. I don't have private insurance, what you Americans would call health insurance. I'm simply a citizen of the country I pay taxes to. Helping me to not die is a part of our social contract. Isn't it part of yours? No! No! No, good friend in Oz. No, it's not part of our social contract here. Our social contract here reads, if you get sick, die! And die quickly. Here's a response from Malaysia. Malaysian here, for my appendicitis a few years ago, my total bill was $25.24. Yeah, okay, a variation on the theme, Texas Betsy. If you get sick, pay us all your money. If you have no money, die. So there's Malaysia, and there's Australia. Here's a response to the 20-year-old story from right here in the good old U.S. of A. America. My cousin died because he couldn't afford his cancer treatment back in 2005. The bills are over a two-year period exceeded $500,000, and the insurance company cut him off. I still remember my uncle pleading with the insurance company over the phone. They said he had reached his lifetime limit. He was 27. Not to get too political, but thank God this crap is illegal now, thanks to the ACA. I hope it is. But then again, even if you make it illegal via a law, you've still got the same voracious, vicious, heartless, soulless, merciless, mercenary. Did I mention vicious, avaricious insurance companies getting paid by us, the taxpayers, to crank out shit policies? Hey, Bob, why don't you and Agnes pay us nearly $1,000 a month, and we'll give you a policy with a $1,300 deductible? Cool, huh? Another American chimed in from the third world. We're the third world now. Have you noticed that? You have noticed that. America is the third world. We took my daughter to the emergency room for projectile vomiting 2 nights in a row. They kept her awake, wouldn't let her sleep until 4 a.m. Then they gave her half of an anti-nausea pill and a juice box and sent us home. The bill, $2,000. I think Ron and Raleigh has his snark on. Those Aussies and others need to get up out of those entitlement hammocks It's just making them victims of their own indolence. And yet, and I don't want to be too much of a bummer about this, but if we busted our collective asses, and I'm not just talking about the Horn family commune, we couldn't get 1 million people on the mall in Washington, D.C. to say, to hell with the for-profit insurance companies, we want Medicare for all. Now, we want a system that is no more complex than, hey, you were born? Congratulations. Welcome to America. Here's your Social Security number. Yeah, you use that when you're sick and you take it to the doctor. Yeah, good. Couldn't get him to do that. And it's not that, yeah, oh, sure, the for-profiteers and the asshats and the greed heads. You're going to destroy 1/6 of the economy. No, we wouldn't. That's the same as the other recycled, filthy little lie that what? You want to raise the minimum wage by 3.5 cents? Every McDonald's in America will close its doors. Sure, they'd do that. But nonetheless, you would have to tear... Even our side, this is our reality. You would have to tear our side away from the latest pronouncement on Duck Doofus. And you would not succeed. The answer to the American healthcare crisis, which has not been abated one goddamned iota, by the Affordable Care Act, is one thing and one thing only. Universal, single-payer health care. You know, I should add as an aside that at the end of January, I'll be going, as I have been for several years now, to Washington, D.C. to broadcast from the Families USA Radio Row. And I've tried to learn, you know, you interview people, I've tried to learn from what they had to offer. I think I'm going to be going there with an entirely different attitude this time. Because I've lived through a little slice of paradise just trying to find out if I could get health insurance for this poor little family of ours. And the picture window into hell that I've gotten to look out of, huh. I'm going to tell me some stories. Yes, indeedy. Robert in Australia, writing, $55,000? Multiple question marks. Bob, a heart bypass costs about $25,000 to $35,000 here in Oz. I know this because my father has had 4 at no cost to him. $55,000 to have your appendix out? Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Well, but see, that $55,000 includes advertising budgets, year-end bonuses for the CEO. Texas Betsy pointing out, and this is very, I mean, this is, you know, this is deep. I was volunteering for the state Democratic Party when they changed from health care reform to health insurance reform. This was all done, she says, by design. Sure. I mentioned a minute ago about how we could not, there's no way we could get people into the streets to demand universal single-payer health care. Don't think it's just an America thing. This story's dateline from the Associated Press is Santiago, Chile. and it has nothing to do with health care. But everything to do with why problems are the way they are. It's a story marking the death of 73-year-old Nicolesa Quintreman. She spent the better part of her adult life as the face of Chile's so-called environmental movement. Her issue, that which she poured her heart, her soul, and her life into, was trying to prevent the construction of a hydroelectric dam on her people's tribal land in southern Chile. The dam was being built and proposed by a European power company called Endesa. She was of the Mapuche people. Nicolesa Quintreman was. They found her floating in a reservoir of the dam that she tried to stop. Her sister Berta said, "I'm going to tell it like it is. My sister fell into the lake. She won't ever come back. This company should leave and pull everything out. I want to emphasize this point. Things have to keep progressing because my sister was a tireless fighter, and now my sister has left me all alone." But this is the point of the story. This was why, when I read it, News Ninja Gene sent this to me last week. This is where I went. Because, see, this is the way that people trying to protect the integrity of their homes, their families, their communities, and their lands, this is the way they end. Face down in a reservoir. Or maybe dropping dead of a heart attack trying to run a weed eater on what's left of a blasted apart mountain. Or maybe laying in her bed at home eaten up with cancer because she spent her life next to a coal prep plant. This is the way we die. All executive directors from Big Greens. Oh, never mind, Bob. Now, they just move on and find a new hero. And ride them like borrowed mules. But that's not the point. That wasn't what I took away out of this story. Nicolesa Quintreman and her sister Berta started the movement to save their ancestral tribal lands from this godforsaken dam. And at the time they did so, as according to the AP report, hundreds of other families supported the women initially. But the company kept up the pressure. And eventually, the company convinced the people who had initially joined in with Berta and Nicolesa Quintreman. The company convinced them to take some land in trade that was outside the flood zone. And once she was all alone, in 2002, Nicolesa Quintreman, she traded her tiny little plot of ground upon which her people had lived for perhaps 15,000 years. She traded it for a little bit of money and a little bit more property 9 miles away. And it might as well have been a world away. At that time in 2002, Nicolaysa Kentrimon said, "People who said they were my friends abandoned me. If they had stayed with me, I could have kept up the fight." The Valley of the Mapuche people is now underwater. And nearly blind Nicolaysa Kentrimon was found floating face down in the reservoir because the people who said her friends, abandoned her. How the hell is the Affordable Care Act not the same sort of divide and conquer strategy? Well, the short and dirty answer is that it is the same kind of divide and cancer strategy. Well, yeah, I mean, some people will still be uninsured, but F them, you'll have insurance. Hey, wait, this goddamn thing's got a $4,000 deductible on it. Ha 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 ha, sucker! We'll close out with a couple of emails. Ron and Raleigh, ACA benefits. I've had a torn rotator cuff for several years now. I couldn't afford to get it fixed prior to the ACA. And guess what? I can't afford to get it fixed with the ACA. What people fail to mention is part of the problem with healthcare in America is that doctors are greedy bastards who are trying to get rich. Not all doctors, but enough to make a big difference. Jeremy in Vermont. I had a cyst removed 2 years ago with at-home care. The end total was over $13,000. I was insured, and the copays were still in the hundreds. You know, look, can we just say this? If it's got a copay, it's not insurance. It's death by a thousand cuts. So it's time to get out of here. I left a light blinking, and I apologize for that. But I kind of wanted to get all that pulled together if I could, and maybe I didn't even succeed. Who knows? We'll be back tomorrow night with the Great Big Horn Skype-a-palooza New Year's Eve spectacular-ganza. Yeah. And thanks very much to Darlene, to Sal, to Dan, and to Ed for helping us climb out of the end-of-the-month hole this evening. We will have $450 to go tomorrow. Thank you. Thanks to everybody, first and foremost you, with your kind contributions of your time listening, your time talking, participating, writing, chatting, tweeting, Facebooking. Thank you. And thank you for the kind contributions that keep this effort afloat. It does not happen without you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on The Horn.